Hey everyone, this is Drew Williams with Guidescent, and I want to thank everybody for listening to today's podcast on the SolarWinds Sunburst Hack. By now, most people have heard about the SolarWinds hack from last December, which has been referred to by some cybersecurity teams as the hack of the century, and the SolarWinds breach itself continues to send shockwaves through U.S. government agencies all the way up to Capitol Hill and out way beyond those 452 of the Fortune 500 companies that were impacted, given the high-profile nature of the target systems that were compromised. And if you haven't been following this event, SolarWinds is a large managed service provider based in Austin, Texas. It's actually one of the larger MSPs in the industry and has influence and connection to many of the critical infrastructure sectors across the globe. So here's a brief synopsis of what happened, how it happened, who it impacted, and what we need to know about defending ourselves from further compromise. These attackers, a state-funded organization called APT-29, delivered malware through the SolarWinds remote management system to thousands of targets. The attackers compromised the build system for one of SolarWinds' remote management system applications called Orion using a combination of advanced persistent threats, or APT, tactics. Orion is a monitoring product, by the way, which is used by MSPs for access to manage system operations of clients subscribing to this type of service. And the Orion hack, which is also referred to as Sunburst, enabled the bad guys to deliver Trojanized updates to thousands of customers for at least 4 months between September and December of 2020. And it may take actually a lot longer to find out whether or not it was just during that time frame. We're still looking at it, but it's going to take a little while to clear the air of this. But based on the early findings and the fallout, this was an attack that was primarily targeting various U.S. government organizations, which included the State Department and all of the branches of the U.S. Armed Forces. And one interesting fact, the perpetrators managed to also gain access to some of Microsoft's internal source code, which is considered the holy grail by cybercrime organizations all over the world. And this isn't the first time that SolarWinds technology has been open to exploitation. A zero-day vulnerability in SolarWinds MSP's remote monitoring and management tool, which they documented and announced all the way back in January of 2020, allowed attackers to steal the administrative credentials of an account holder. In the case of this most recent attack, these guys targeted any exposed RDP ports or potentially compromised accounts through credential harvesting campaigns or both, which would be picked up by Beacon or through a compromised point of access, which is one of the more common methods for gaining access into MSP environments. In fact, a lot of security people refer to RDP as the ransomware delivery platform because of the ease by which the RDP can be exploited for compromise. And by the way, this attack is classified as a supply chain attack, which was, as I mentioned, deployed to more than 18,000 organizations, which means potentially hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of affected endpoints. The malware used to exploit SolarWinds was hidden as legitimate code and blended into the background, which made it even more complicated. And this malware inserted into SolarWinds masquerades its network traffic and stores reconnaissance results within legitimate plugin configuration files, allowing it to blend in with legitimate SolarWinds activity. And the backdoor that they have plugged into this thing uses multiple obfuscated block lists to identify forensic and antivirus tools running as processes, services, and drivers so it can continue to masquerade. And to add insult to injury, the attackers named this set of tasks that they built Orion Improvement Business Layer, through which they were able to mask their activities into legitimate operations, blending in with the rest of the code. And this class of application contains all the backdoor bells and whistles you'd expect, which included compromising 13 subclasses and 16 methods, with strings obfuscated to further hide malicious code in the background even deeper. The hackers exploited SolarWinds Orion admin permissions to access a targeted trusted token signing certificate, which allowed them to forge tokens that impersonate any of the organization's existing users and accounts, and that included highly privileged accounts. And following an initial period of dormancy so that the network would quiet back down, this is often the case with this type of APT attack campaigns, hackers then would allow the system to settle into a somewhat unsuspecting lull, as it were, followed by a planned and coordinated attack. And in this case, the Trojan retrieved and executed commands called jobs, which included the ability to transfer files, execute file commands, profile the system, reboot the machine, disable services, all masquerading its network traffic as part of the system's improvement program protocol. Meanwhile, the coded backdoor uses multiple obfuscated block lists to identify forensic and antivirus tools running its processes, servers, and drivers, and uses a weaponized version of Cobalt Strike for further penetration into thousands of systems. So how do the chips fall after the fact? Well, for starters, this event has caused major cybersecurity ripples throughout thousands of high-profile organizations, as well as hundreds of mid-enterprise companies, universities, colleges, and organizations in all 16 critical infrastructures. And in fact, the National Security Council held an emergency session recently to discuss containment and recovery, which is going to be ongoing for months. And as I mentioned earlier, this attack involved hackers compromising the infrastructure of SolarWinds, which produces a network and applications monitoring platform in their Orion product portfolio. And then, once the attackers gained access, they created and distributed updates to the software's users. And one list published by a cybersecurity firm includes a lot of familiar names, and although those organizations are each dealing with the fallout to contain the situation respectively, they include Cisco and Deloitte, Mount Sinai Hospital, and several other large profile hospitals, medical organizations, local municipalities throughout the U.S., educational institutions, power companies, and financial institutions. So if anyone does business with any of these kinds of organizations, the chances of collateral risk becomes a bit more elevated. Also, the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency recently distributed an advisory as well that the attackers may have used other initial access points besides SolarWinds, which may include other MSPs that may leverage the same type of architecture. For example, attackers have been using a zero-day vulnerability in VMware's access and identity management products to attack government systems, according to the NSA, and VMware confirmed that it was notified of the vulnerability by the NSA and released a patch earlier in January, but they also confirmed that they have since found instances of compromised SolarWinds software in their environment, and they also claim that that has had no further exploit activity, but the jury's still out, so we'll just have to see. But there are a few takeaways that we can consider as immediate action items from a defensive posture. There's really no ironclad be-all, do-all solution, of course, with respect to recovery from such an incident as this. But still, organizations should consider taking a stronger look at some basic IT and system operational security precautions. One thing we've seen as a result of this is that, once again, critical choke points are based on multi-factor authentication and system updates being monitored. And also, this is really important, and it's really scary, too. The only reason this was even discovered was because of stolen credentials being used to attempt to register a new device for multi-factor authentication. And had those MFA controls not caught the discrepancy, and had that employee whose credentials were in question not reported the compromised account, this situation might still not have been discovered, and this group could still be out there in the ether doing even greater damage to this nation's critical infrastructure as well as many others. We might also consider that organizations need to be in constant dialogue with their respective partner suppliers, ensuring they too are following best practices like checking the integrity of their code and checking their own systems repeatedly for any indications of compromise. And this isn't going to be just one of those one and done types of conversations. Also, the guys over at the Poneman Institute are making a lot of noise about data centers now taking a zero trust model more seriously. And I'll talk about zero trust in a future podcast. But basically what it means is don't trust anything that you see come in the system just because you think it was validated or verified. And so what can be done right now to reduce the risk of impact from this event? Well, for starters, SolarWinds has certainly advised that all of their updates are to be taken seriously, like upgrading to newer platforms of Orion as soon as possible, so on and so forth, to make sure they have the clean version. But some security teams are suggesting that this is going to require a bare metal refresh to make sure that the bad guys are gone completely, which of course isn't practical, it'd be expensive, and it's time consuming. So we're once again caught between risk tolerance and defense by design. And certainly, when we see the results of this SolarWinds incident, this is a prime example of where attackers can be selective about which target that has deployed their code that they want to pivot to, which is now a huge portion of our core IT infrastructure. And this is a classic inside-out threat model discussion, which isn't really happening in the development cycles today as often as they should. And it's been something we've been jumping up and down about for more than 20 years in development and security and operations. And certainly greater visibility into what organizations actually do to maintain security is going to go a long way to addressing risk overall. Now, that said, this whole SolarWinds cyber attack situation serves as a sobering notification regarding the need to be constantly mindful of the threats that are deeply planted within third-party vendor supply chains. And that starts with basic cybersecurity hygiene. At the very least, and regardless of whether you're a global enterprise or a small family-operated business in Smallville, USA, your company should ensure it's taking certain measures to protect those assets that are at the core of your business. From a security operations perspective, it's a really good idea to understand where those core assets and related data reside within your infrastructure. And also make sure everyone in the organization understands where the data and those assets are appropriately classified and how they're classified, and if the right system controls are in place, including effective and comprehensive tools for auditing and event detection and notification. And don't even get me started on password strength. That will be a topic for a podcast in the near future, but that is something that we need to consider as part of the security hygiene that we're looking at. And another important takeaway from this situation relates to how organizations and resources access your network, and not to assume that unusual outbound network traffic is harmless just because, even when sourced to a trusted application, for example. And finally, making sure everyone who has access to the assets within an organization have need for that access, but only for the period of time necessary to do a specific set of tasks. And that, again, is part of principle of least privilege. And with that, I hope this podcast helps start those crucial conversations about how organizations may consider their security posture as a top priority in the boardroom and in the workroom. And if you have any further questions, give Guidison a call. There's a good chance we can help you navigate the best course of action to better secure your business. I'm Drew Williams. Thanks for listening.